everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go.
All right. Wow. Thank y'all. That's great. Like Peter said, my name is Ray. I am the Melissa campus pastor. I am so, so happy to be here. We moved here 10 years ago. My wife, I have two kids. We drove from Seattle, which was a huge mistake. That's a different story for a different day. We've added two members to our family. Not kids, we added two cats to our family. And I am not a fan of cats. Some of you are clapping, sorry. Yes, I'm not a fan of cats. And not cats in general, although I think we can all admit cats tend to be rude and kind of pretentious. But my cat in particular, because I have the most bougie cat you've ever met. I'm not exaggerating. My son has trained my cat to only drink bottled water. He won't drink, we have a fountain. He won't drink it, it's not good enough. I have still water, it's not good enough. It has to be bottled water, preferably Fiji. No, I'm kidding about the Fiji part, but for real, he only drinks bottled water. And then my daughter loves this, has created a YouTube channel for my cats. And I was tempted to share the channel, but my cats have a ton of subscribers, way more than I do, so they don't need any more. So I have two cat influencers as a part of my family. I have a crazy family. That's just the tip of the iceberg. It's a cast of characters at my house and extends to my whole family, but we're nothing like the cast of characters that were chosen to follow Jesus. And we're in the middle of the Outsider series, which has been amazing. If you've missed it, you gotta go back. We've shared about Matthew and Peter and John and some of the women that were following Jesus. And this main idea is that the people that were chosen by Jesus to follow him were the least likely people to be chosen. And some of these people who were chosen had amazing faith, like Peter, who stepped out of the boat. And some of them had little faith. One of them in particular is famous for having no faith, lots of doubts. He's famous for having doubts. And some of us, some of you, have amazing faith, great faith, move a mountain type of faith. And that is not me. I'm little faith. I have a tiny bit of faith. And just recently, I went to Honduras with John Stanley, who's our mission pastor. And we toured a lady's home, her business. It's a cool story. She started a business to provide for her family. And at the end of the tour, John Stanley asked her, "What is one thing you're praying for that only God can do? What's something you're praying for that only God could do?" And she said, "I'm hoping to expand my business so I could hire deaf people. Because my sister is deaf, she can't hear. It'll be great to offer her a job." But the translator messed up the translation. And he said, "I'm praying that I could hire dead people." Dead people. And I looked at John and I was like, wow, that is amazing faith to pray for dead people, to hire them. And some of y'all have that type of faith, and that's amazing. I am jealous. I don't have that. I am very doubtful. I'm skeptical. Honestly, it's hard for me to believe anyone or anything unless I have a mountain of data, unless I have a bunch of evidence, and then I'll double check it with ChatGPT, and then maybe I'll believe. But I'm looking for peer-reviewed citations and documentation. So that's me. That's how I'm wired. I lean towards the doubtful, skeptical side. And sometimes it's helped me, and other times it's hindered me. Just recently, I was having a conversation with someone, and I said, "Hey, are you sure you should be following health advice from a TikTok account that's famous for dancing?" Maybe, but I would double check that. Are you sure that the Texas State Fair trained this 17-year-old kid how to wash his hands and in safety? Maybe he did, but I'm just not gonna risk it. So I tend to be skeptical, right? And I think that's good, because be safe, right? But other times, lots of times, it's hindered me. A couple years ago, my sister called me at work and said, hey, can you pick me up from the doctor's office and take me to the hospital? I think I have a swollen appendix. And I know most of you would have gone, yes, immediately, it's a medical emergency, I'll be right there. But I had questions. So I asked her, be honest with me. Did you put your symptoms into WebMD and now you think you have a swollen appendix? And she said, no, they told me I need to go to the hospital. And I said, who is they? Is it the people in the waiting room that told you to go? Was it the receptionist, the nurse? If it was a doctor, where did that doctor study? Let's check his credentials. And I'm just not believing her at all. And she finally says, would you take me or not? And I'm like, fine, I'll take you. I know you just ate spicy food, but let's go. And I took her. And an hour later, her appendix burst. I know. It's been 15 years, and she just forgave me recently, I think. I hope. It turns out my doubts were unfounded. And I know those are examples we can laugh about. Well, not my sister. She's not laughing. But the rest of us can laugh. But I do have real struggles with doubt. If you dig a little deeper under the surface, I've wrestled with doubt most of my adult life. I remember the first time I walked into the Mathari slum in Nairobi, Kenya, and I had never seen poverty like this. I had never seen it to this scale, the scope of it, the magnitude just shook me to my core. And I thought, how could this be? Where is God in this? How could God allow this to happen? And I've been wrestling with that for years. Another time I'm working with this family, they're day laborers, and the grandparents and the parents and the kids all work just to have enough food to eat that evening. But they've come to faith. The grandparents, and then the parents, and the kids, all of them, they've all come to faith. They're going to church. They even did the right thing and put their kids in a school so they can get an education, and they're making all the right choices. And there's a tragic accident, and one of their children is gone. And I remember having to tell the family that, the agony, the grief they felt. How could God allow this to happen? This family was doing everything right. They're going to church, they were praying, they were doing everything you would check. And this happens? And those examples are from my past, but right now, me and my extended family, we're facing one of the toughest challenges we've ever faced. And we've seen doctors, we've seen therapists, we've seen counselors, we've prayed about it. And it's not getting any better. And I'm wondering why. Why, God? There's a biblical image in the Old Testament for doubt, and it's losing your foothold, because that's what doubt feels like, losing your foothold. You were on solid ground. You had certainty, and then you start slipping. And you're losing your certainty, you're losing your foothold. It's like the feeling of vertigo. And oftentimes, that's what doubt can feel like. And I don't think I'm the only one who's struggling with doubt. I think there's a lot of us that struggle with these doubts. Some of us, we have doubts that come from disappointments. You're in a situation that seems unfair. You've done everything right, and God did not answer your prayers. You raised your children in the ways of the Lord, but now they're as far away from God as they possibly can be. You acted in integrity. You did everything right, and you were still let go unjustly. You've been generous, but you can't pay your bills. You're seeing counselors, but your marriage is crumbling around you. You've been a faithful Christian, and you get this medical diagnosis. Some of us, our problems are too much. You cannot bear it another day, and you feel like God is a million miles away. Sometimes you look around and it feels like God's answering everyone's prayer except yours. And so you're in doubt. You're doubting. And some of our doubts, they're coming from seeing suffering or personally experiencing suffering. When you're in pain, when you're in suffering, when you experience brokenness, it's easy to doubt. It's natural. How could this happen? How could this exist? How could this type of injustice exist? Why would a good God, why would a loving God allow this to happen? Sometimes you feel like God is not there. You feel like God does not care. There's a different type of suffering, the church hurt type. The church hurt you or hurt a loved one. Or when you needed the church the most, that's when they turned their back on you and you're wondering, how could Christians treat someone like that? So you have doubts. And some of your doubts are intellectual obstacles. You have questions that don't have answers. You can't get the answers you're looking for. You just can't believe in unverified miracles, much less the resurrection of the dead. You can't believe in God. There's no empirical evidence. You can't touch, you can't see. So how can you believe? Or maybe you were younger, you believed, but then as you grew up, now you're having doubts, you're having questions, and you're wondering, is this whole thing flawed? Or if you're new to the Jesus thing, maybe you're thinking, hey, before I jump in, I need to get all my doubts resolved. But we all have doubts. And that's not an exhaustive list. There's many other reasons for doubts. But whatever you're going through, doubt has a way of creeping in. And doubt is pervasive. You've lost your foothold. Or you're losing your foothold. And now you're doubting God's goodness, God's care, God's love. You're wondering, does God even have a plan for my life? Does he care about my family, my kids, my marriage? Does he care about my career? Or you're doubting God's existence? So if you're in that season of life where you're doubting, I have some great news for you. The good news is that you are in good company because the Bible, the scriptures are full of people who doubted. They're full of people who, just like us, looked and asked God hard questions. And what I'm hoping that we see today is that doubt doesn't have to be the enemy of faith. Doubt is actually part of the faith journey. Doubt is normal. Doubt is natural. Uncertainty is the nature of what the Bible calls faith. And we'll see that God can actually use our doubt to deepen our faith. But more than anything else, the most important thing I want you to see is how God responds to us in our doubt. How does God respond to doubt? And I expect it's not what you think, because I was taught and I was told that God would be angry at me or disappointed at me because I doubted. And we're gonna see that couldn't be further from the truth. So our outsider today is doubting Thomas, poor Thomas. He's always remembered by doubt. He may ask these one question and for the rest of his life, he's known as doubting Thomas, right? Imagine if your nickname was your weakest moment. Yeah, I'd be in trouble. I'd be in trouble for lots of reasons, but one that I might think of is my first date with my wife. We were going on a date. We were living in Pasadena, California. We were studying there, and we were walking to a movie theater. We parked far away. We thought it'd be romantic to walk in Old Town Pasadena. And I go to pay for the movie tickets, and I realize my wallet is in my car about a mile away. And this is pre-Apple Pay time, so I gotta bite the bullet, and at least my wife has to pay. So it's embarrassing, but my nickname is not Ray who doesn't pay. It could have been that, but it's not, right? So thank God for grace. So poor Thomas, doubting Thomas. We're gonna focus on the most famous story of Thomas. But before I get there, I do wanna touch on the first two times Thomas makes an appearance, because I think it's gonna help us get an accurate picture of who Thomas was. So the first time Thomas shows up after being chosen is right before Jesus performs his most amazing miracle, which is raising Lazarus from the dead. The disciples have just received the news that Lazarus is dead, and Jesus wants to return back to Bethany, where Lazarus is at, was at. But it's dangerous. If he goes back there, the authorities are looking for him. He could be arrested. He could be killed even. So I'm going to pick up when Jesus is making the announcement that we're going back to Bethany. So this is John chapter 11, verses 15. Jesus is talking and says, "And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there, for now you will really believe. Come, let's go see him. Let's go see Lazarus." And then Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, and I want you to read this with that sarcastic voice in the back of your head, okay? "Let's go to and die with Jesus." Can you hear the sarcasm? It's like he's muttering under his breath. "Fine, let's go and we'll die too, I guess." It's like the pessimistic side, the skeptical side. But honestly, I understand where Thomas is coming from. If we go back, we're putting ourselves at risk. Lazarus is already dead, so why go back? It doesn't make any sense. It's illogical for us to go back. But here's what's interesting. Even though he has a bad attitude and he's skeptical and maybe a bit sarcastic, he is still willing to go to follow Jesus, which is better than nothing. He could have said, "Jesus, you go, I'll wait here. When you come back, you give me a thumbs up and we'll keep on going." But he does it despite his doubts. Despite his lack of understanding, he is taking a step forward. He's moving forward, okay? The next time we see Thomas, he's asking a great question. And now Jesus is giving his final speech, the "I'm going to prepare a place for you" speech. And then we're gonna see how Thomas responds. So I'm gonna pick up right in the middle of Jesus' speech. This is John 14, verse 2. "There is more than enough room in my Father's home. If this were not so, would I have told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? And when everything is ready, I will come get you so that you will always be with me where I am. And you know the way to the place where I'm going." "No, we don't, Lord." I love Thomas. He just shouts that out. Doesn't wait for a pause. He's just there. Jesus says, "You know the way to the place where I'm going." "No, we don't, Lord," Thomas says. "We have no idea where you're going. So how can we know the way?" I love this response. The math isn't mathing. So maybe realist is a better word for Thomas because he just wants facts. He's saying the thing that everyone wants to say, but they're scared to say. He just wants the detailed plan. You've heard the expression, clarity is kindness. I can imagine Thomas going to Jesus and saying, "Jesus, clarity is kindness, and you are being very unclear. Here's the map. Point on the map where you're going so we know how to get there." So I completely understand that. And look how Jesus responds. Jesus replies with one of his most famous sayings, "I am the way, the truth, and the light. No one comes to the Father except through me." And I know we all love that passage, but I can imagine Thomas giving Jesus the biggest side eye and saying, "Jesus, be so for real. I ask for certainty and you're giving me a metaphor. That is not helpful at all." So I understand Thomas. He's a guy who is pessimistic. He's skeptical. He wants clarity. He wants certainty. And he's not getting it, which leads to the famous story. Now, here's the background before I read John chapter 20. Jesus has appeared one time, to all the disciples. And it was a cool scene. They're all scared. They've heard the rumors that Jesus was resurrected, but they haven't seen him. They're scared for their life. So they've locked the doors, and suddenly Jesus appears in the middle of the room. And he says peace to them. He commissions them. He says, as the Father has sent me, so am I going to send you. He breathes on them. They receive the Holy Spirit. It is like an awesome, awesome scene, a perfect day, except Thomas was not there. He was missing. So, John chapter 20, verse 24. One of the 12 disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, was not with the others when Jesus came. And they told him, "We have seen the Lord!" Exclamation point, which is, they're excited. "Thomas, we saw Jesus. It's true. He's alive. The rumors are true. We saw him." But Thomas replies, "I won't believe. This is too much for me right now. I can't believe. I won't believe unless I see, unless I touch, unless I see the nail wounds in his hands and put my fingers in them, unless I place my hand into the wound in his side. And this time, I want you to hear the pain in his voice." Because Thomas is crashing out. Thomas is doubting. Thomas has experienced one of the worst weeks of his life, probably the worst week of his life. His master, his teacher, his best friend has been arrested and killed unjustly in the most humiliating way possible, right in front of his eyes. Thomas is being chased and threatened by the same people who murdered Jesus. He's scared for his life. So all of his dreams, all of his hopes, all of his future plans, they're gone. They're dashed. So he's been let down. He's probably mad at himself for not sticking up for Jesus. He's definitely mad at God for saying, "God, how could you let this happen to Jesus?" So Thomas is saying, I can't go through this again. I can't get my hopes up again. Thomas is drowning in doubt, disappointment, suffering, intellectual challenges. He's honest about it, and he's a little bit open. The door's ajar. He's open to it. If he can see, no, he needs more than to be able to see. He needs to touch. So he's maybe, but not now, not yet, and not unless I see. Because Thomas can't go down that road again. And a lot of us, we're there today. That's where we are. We're doubting to that extent. So let's see how Jesus responds. 8 days later, the disciples were together again. And this time, Thomas was with them. I'm going to pause here for a second because I want to point this out. 8 days have passed now since Jesus showed up and the disciples told Thomas, "We saw him." Thomas is still doubting, probably still in the grief, definitely still in the pain, but he is still showing up. He is still moving forward, and he is still staying connected to this group of disciples. So how many conversations did Thomas have during those 8 days? How many tears did he shed? How many doubts raced through his mind? How many times did he yell at God, maybe even curse God? We don't know, but we do know that he's still showing up and he's staying connected. So verse 26, the doors were locked, but suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. "Peace be with you," he said. And then he said to Thomas. I'm going to pause here because I'm not going to read what he said first because I want you to imagine the scene. There's a lot of people in the room. Jesus shows up, but he only has eyes for Thomas. And I imagine his eyes are full of love and compassion. And I say that because of what Jesus is about to say and what Jesus is about to do. And here's what Jesus does not say. Jesus doesn't scold Thomas. He doesn't say, "How dare you doubt me? What's wrong with you? How many miracles do you need to see? Why can't you be more like Peter or this guy or that guy who has more faith? Why can't you be more faithful?" There is no shaming. There is no criticism. There is no minimizing, none whatsoever. Instead, look what Jesus does. He says, Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Jesus is saying, Thomas, I see you. I know what you need. I know your doubts. I know the pain that you're in. I know the disappointment you're experiencing. I've seen every single tear that you've shed. And I am here to meet you where you're at. I am moving closer to you. Thomas, what do you need? That's what Jesus is gonna give him. Do you need to see? Do you need to touch? Here, look, look, touch. So how did Jesus respond to Thomas's doubts? He drew closer to Thomas. He took a step forward towards Thomas. And that's because, and this is my main idea, doubt does not repel God from us. Doubt draws God to us. Doubt doesn't repel God. Doubt doesn't push God away. It does the opposite, actually. Doubt draws God to us. Doubt draws God. And God doesn't wait till all of our doubts are gone. He doesn't wait till we get our act together. He doesn't wait till we believe 100% and have zero doubts. God meets us where we are at. He doesn't expect us to meet him where he is at. God comes to us. Our doubts, our deepest doubts, draw God closer to us. And we see this pattern happening throughout the Bible. There's this book in the Old Testament called Job, a guy who went through the worst of the worst and doubts, him and his friends, and God shows up. King David was also a poet, and he wrote a bunch of songs, and his lyrics are full of doubts and asking God, God, why have you forsaken me? And God drew close to David. John the Baptist spent the last year of his life in a jail cell, and he doubted, and God drew close to him. Did Jesus love Thomas with his doubts? Did Jesus choose Thomas knowing he would doubt him? Yes, of course he did. Does Jesus love you and me in our doubts? Does Jesus choose us knowing we are going to doubt? Yes. Because doubt does not disqualify you. It draws God closer to you. And what I want you to hear more than anything else today is that God is drawing close to you right now. In the middle of your doubt and disappointment and pain, God is near. So Jesus takes a step forward towards Thomas and meets him there. And then he says, stop doubting and believe. Stop doubting and believe. Jesus drew close, and with encouragement, he says, now that I'm here, let's walk through this together. Let's allow your doubts to propel you to a deeper faith, stronger faith, because God can do that with our doubts. And look what happens. And Thomas immediately responds, verse 28. Thomas said to him, my Lord and my God. And many theologians say this is the climax, the pinnacle of the whole book of John. He is the first person to look Jesus in the eyes, face to face, and say, you are my Lord and you are my God. And it's so fitting that the person to exclaim those words, it's not Peter or John or Andrew or any of the other disciples. It's doubting Thomas. Mr. Doubt is the one who recognizes Jesus as God. See, Thomas could have gone either way with his doubts, but he was honest with his doubts. He took them to Jesus, and his doubt ended up deepening, strengthening his faith. And that's what doubt, God can do with our doubts. Your doubts is a pathway towards transformation, towards deeper faith. God can take your doubts and do something incredible with them. And that's what happened to Thomas. It doesn't end there. Thomas, history tells us, tradition tells us that he spread the gospel throughout the Middle East, throughout India, and was later killed for his faith. I know we know him as Doubting Thomas, but really his name should be Thomas the Bold or Thomas the Brave or Thomas the I don't know, something strong. Not Doubting Thomas, because God transformed his doubt and it led him to deeper faith. So Jesus ends this scene with a message for Thomas, but it's a message that's for us as well 2,000 years later. This is verse 29. And then Jesus told him, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen, yet have believed. And that's for us, because for most of us, we're not gonna see. I know miracles happen, but for most of us, we're not gonna see. Not now, not yet. So some of the doubts we have or we're wrestling with, we might never get an answer to those doubts. We might just be stuck with those doubts, but that's okay, because doubts are drawing God closer to us. So then the question becomes, what do we do with our doubts? What can we learn from the story, from Thomas and others in the Bible, how to live with doubt? Timothy Keller has a framework that I have found really helpful as I've wrestled with doubt. And what he says is that Thomas had active doubt versus passive doubt. And he makes a distinction between those two concepts. There's active doubt and passive doubt. So what is active doubt? Active doubt means you're open to new truths, to answers. It means you're asking, you're searching, you're seeking, you're knocking, you're curious, you're leaning in, you're open to change. You have doubts, you might have lots of doubts, but you're looking for answers and you're willing to believe. So you have the posture of a student. And most importantly, God is drawing near to you. And that's what Thomas had. Thomas had active doubt. On the other hand, on the other side, there is passive doubt. And passive doubt is more concerning. Passive doubt is like a closed-mindedness. It's like I'm not even open to asking questions. It's ignoring all the evidence. It's using the fact that things are unclear and messy to not even engage. It's not even asking questions. It's refusing to move no matter what evidence presents itself. And the biblical word for passive doubt is unbelief. And unbelief is different than doubt. Unbelief is refusal to learn, a refusal to grow. Another way of looking at it is unbelief is running away from the God who is drawing close to you. And in the story of Thomas, we see what active doubt looks like, and we can learn how to deal with doubt in a healthy manner. And here's a few things I want to highlight. First, be honest about your doubt. The cool thing about Thomas is that he was completely honest, sarcastic even, but he was brutally honest. And we need to be honest. We can't fake it. We need to be honest, and we're not gonna shock God. We're not gonna surprise God. You're not gonna scare God away. Remember, your doubts actually draw God closer. So when was the last time you were completely honest with God and you told God, here is what doesn't make any sense to me. This is why I'm mad, or this is why I'm mad at you. I'm gonna give us a chance to be honest in our closing prayer. But I actually find it helpful to write down my doubts, and that gives me perspective, and I feel like it helps me look back and say, wow, God answered a lot of my doubts. So first thing we learn from Thomas is you have to be honest with your doubts. We don't have to suppress it or hide it. Second, find someone safe or be someone safe person. Thomas stayed in community. Even in the middle of his doubt, of the hardest periods of his life, he is staying connected. He is showing up. And we have to stay connected. We have to find safe people, a safe community where we can process our doubt with. I was recently asked by someone who's joining our Melissa campus team if they can be a part of the launch team if they don't believe yet. And I was saddened by that question. I was sad that he had to ask, because somewhere in his past, he was told or he was taught, you won't be welcomed if you have doubts, or the church is not a safe place for doubts. And I think the opposite is true. The church should be the safest place for people to bring their doubts. The church should be the best place for people to come and wrestle with their faith. And many of us grew up in places where we were judged or shamed or minimized because of our doubts. We were made to feel guilty, so it was easier to suppress our doubts, but not at Chase Oaks. This needs to be the safest place for people to talk about doubts. So if you're new and you're trying out the whole Jesus thing, this is a great place, the best place to come with your questions. Parents, if one of your kids comes to you and says, hey, I'm struggling believing, or I don't believe anymore, do what Jesus did. Draw close, give them a hug and say, hey, we're gonna walk through this together. If someone you know is suffering or they're in pain, walk with them like Jesus did. Tell them you're not alone. Don't say cliche or pat answers. Just sit with them, pray with them. Be someone's safe person or find someone safe. And the third thing we see Thomas doing is he kept moving forward. Thomas had doubts, real doubts, concerns. He was in grief, he was in pain, he was disappointed, but he kept moving forward. And that's what faith is, right? A step of faith, taking a step, daring to take a step forward when you're not sure, when there's uncertainty. And it's not easy. It does require courage. Even a small step can be very challenging. But keep following Jesus. Don't let doubt hold you back. Don't let doubt keep you stuck. And that's how active doubt turns into deeper faith, by being honest, by staying connected with others, and by moving forward. And I don't want to make that sound easy, because it's anything but. This isn't a formula, but I do want you to hold on to this truth. We know how God responds to doubt. We saw it play out in the story of Thomas. God draws clear. Our doubts don't repel God, they draw God. So the question is really, how will you respond to your doubts? For those of us that are wrestling, that are in the middle of situations where we're doubting, how are we going to respond? Thomas kept moving forward. He took a step. So let me ask you today as I wrap up, what's one step, even a small step, you can take today? For some of you, that step needs to be having a heart-to-heart with God, where you can be brutally honest with God and tell God your pain, your hurt, your disappointment, and all of your doubts. That's the step you need to take. And for some of you, you need to find that safe person, that safe group, that safe friend or pastor or counselor to talk with. That's your step. And for some of you, you need to be the safe person. You need to go to that person in your life who is in pain, that's in doubt, and wrap your arms around them and say, you're not alone. I am here, and we're going to walk through this together. That's your next step. And for other ones of you, you need to keep moving forward and keep asking questions, keep searching, keep knocking, keep seeking. Maybe it's committing to coming to Chase Oaks until your questions are answered. We don't have to be able to explain the unexplainable to follow Jesus. Doubt is a part of the journey. We all doubt. Some of our greatest heroes, not just Thomas, but in history, Billy Graham, Mother Teresa, they all doubted. And eventually that doubt propelled them towards deeper faith. So if you have doubts, welcome. Doubts don't disqualify you. It makes you human. God believes in you, and that's why you're here. God is drawing close because of your doubts, and he's going to use those doubts to deepen your faith if you will let him. So I'm going to pray for us. And what I want to do in my prayers, I want to give a space to just name our doubts, to name our questions, and to bring them to Jesus. So in my prayer, I'm going to be silent for a little bit, and that'll be your time for just you and God to just take that step of being honest with God. So pray with me. Dear Father, thank you for drawing close to me and to us, those of us that are in the middle of a season of doubt. Here are my doubts. Go ahead and tell God. Tell God your pain. Tell God where you're disappointed. Tell God what you don't understand. And like Thomas, tell God what you need. Thank you, Jesus, for drawing close to us. And I know you're going to meet us in our doubts. You're going to meet us in our need. There are so many tangible ways you have shown up for us in our lives. There are so many undeniable ways you've showed up. So remind us, show us, in Jesus' name, amen.